Hi, I'm Stephen Kotler, and I'm about to have a productive conversation with Mike Vardy.
Welcome to A Productive Conversation. It's me, Mike Vardy, and I'm joined once again by Stephen Kotler, who's been on the program before to talk about his book, The Art of Impossible. Now we're going to talk about NAR Country, growing old and staying rad. Excited to have this conversation. It's a book that literally, as we were recording, was getting ready to come out. It's just out now as of the release of this episode. And if you don't know who Stephen Kotler is, he's been studying human performance for over 30 years and has taught hundreds of thousands of people at all skill levels, age groups, and walks of life how to achieve peak performance. And here's the thing. This book addresses whether or not this own advice could work for him. Again, another great conversation with Stephen. I can't wait to share it with you, so let's not wait any longer. Here's my conversation, and a productive one at that, with Stephen Kotler. There we go. Stephen, good to have you back on the program to talk about something that, you know, we talked about The Art of Impossible before, and this, your latest work, when I got notice of what it's going to be about, as somebody who's pushing 50 at this point, which is still young to a lot of people, but I'm increasingly becoming the older person in the room. It was, as I looked at what you were working on, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a fascinating discussion, because I feel like I am somebody who is, yes, pushing 50, but my brain doesn't feel anywhere near that. And I think that's a challenge that a lot of people face. And you're running this experiment. I mean, you run the experiment on yourself to tackle things despite getting older that maybe most people getting, not maybe, most people getting older would not even dare try to do. So let's get into that. First off, why was it like, I need to eat my own dog food? Was that the whole, the very beginning of the genesis of NAR Country? Was that the genesis of it?
No, believe it or not, the genesis of NAR Country is a story that's actually not in the book. So my wife and I run a hospice care dog sanctuary, and we have for 20 years. And there has been a movement in canine health to double canine lifespan. And there's high-tech stuff going on. I've got friends who are working on synthetic biology, you know, N-to-1 cancer meds and really fancy stuff. And then there's sort of more lower-tech or practical tech, which is a lot of what my wife and I had done. But what we started to see just with our dogs long before I got to this topic is that by making a handful big lifestyle changes and some nutrition change, a couple other things, we could get five. We like in the work we do, it's always about the worst of the worst. We like, if you're a chihuahua with one eye, three legs, late stage cancer, heart disease, mange and bad gas, and an abusive past, you're our dog. Like, that's what we like to work with. And so all our dogs go to the vet first, and they come with us like these dire warnings. Oh, don't get too attached. This dog is going to live a month, maybe two. And over 20 years of doing this work, we started to realize that, like, once we got our healing protocol down, as a lot of it's based on flow and things like that, that you're pretty familiar with, our dogs were living 5, 6, 7 more years than the vet. The vet said they'd be dead in 2 months, and they would live 7 more years. And not just like sort of dribble along. We take the dogs in the backcountry for 5-mile hikes every day up and down mountains. So like, these dogs were thriving. And so it started with, okay, wait a minute, there are interventions possible that can like massively increase the health and longevity in canines. And isn't that interesting? That was literally sort of like where it started. I wrote about this work in my book, A Small Furry Prayer. And, it started there, and then it sort of built into humans accidentally. And the story, you know, how I started running the experiment, I lost my mind. Like, it was, you know, for sure. I mean, a lot of my books have come from fits of madness. That's not all that unusual on a certain level where you just have a really crazy idea. But like, the story at the heart of the book was, for a bunch of different reasons, this is where it started, but I decided to see if I could learn to park ski at age 53. Now, park skiing is the discipline in skiing that involves jumps, boxes, wall rides, rails, it for about a dozen biological factors that we can go into, it is considered really challenging for anybody over the age of 35. By 45, it's like, you don't go near it in your 50s. No, people thought I was crazy.
Right.
But there's a whole bunch of new work coming out of three fields: flow science, which is sort of, you know, where I've spent my career, embodied cognition, which is the idea that our brains don't just live in our heads, right? They're distributed through our bodies and in the environment. And it directly, that embodied cognition is right next to flow science. Flow has an embodied trigger. So like I've been working in that field for a while. And network neuroscience, which is another field, you know, neurodynamics, basically. There's been a bunch of new findings in these three fields that say, hey, wait a minute. If these findings are right, it should be possible for older adults to make a lot of progress in seemingly impossible activities like park skiing. But it was all stuff done in labs and research papers. And I was like, all right, well, let's put it, either I'm going to go end up in the hospital having more surgery, and that would be a terrible failure, right? Or this might work. Here's where things got weird. To judge my progress, I made a list of 20 tricks I wanted to learn. It was essentially a list that got me from zero. I had no experience, which is where I started. I was a good skier, but no experience park skiing, to intermediate. And I'll talk about why. We'll talk about where this came from in terms of like peak performance aging in a second. But like, there was a reason I wanted to get to intermediate. And essentially, I thought, if it takes 5 years, whatever, right? Like, I'll be a radically different skier 5 years from now. Cool, that'll be great. And what ended up happening is I got there in a single season. And not only did I teach myself how to park ski in a single season, I also, as a big mountain skier, which is the thing I've been doing for a while, I skied the rowdiest lines of my entire life in the same season. And that was crazy. My ski partner, who was a actual former pro sponsored park skier, but much younger than me, but he had gotten really injured and stopped. He had came back to the sport when I came into it and started applying the same stuff I was applying. And he made crazy amounts of progress. Like, what I thought was going to take 5 years for me took a season for me, and he was making crazy progress. So this is not in the book, but I can announce it. We're starting to announce it now. This past season, we took all these same ideas and we took a group of 17 older adults, ages 30 to 68, and we used these same basic principles that I could talk about what they are and how we did it, and taught them how to park ski or snowboard. And most of the people in our study group weren't even expert skiers. They were like intermediates and things like that. Nobody had any park skiing experience. And what wasn't just exciting was how fast they learned. It's that by the time they were done, everybody had a radical shift in what they thought was possible in the second half of their lives. And that was really right. Like, park skiing is one thing, but there are certain things about park skiing or park snowboarding and action sports in general that are actually really quite interesting for peak performance aging reasons. But the whole point was what it actually unlocked in people in the second half of our lives.
Yeah, it was like the impetus. Like, if you could do this, imagine what else you could do. One of the things you mentioned is you didn't put a time limit on yourself. Like you said, you did it in the season, but you kind of said, like, if it happens in 5 years, great. Like, you're someone who has studied flow, like that's your thing. I would think that friction would play a massive role in initially getting this going, or at least for people who are, you know, again, you said, you know, this kind of skiing is very challenging. That in and of itself would present itself as friction. So to me, this almost seems like it's like the ultimate push from, okay, how do we get flow from a place where there's going to be an extreme level of friction? And that's something I'm curious about.
Yeah, it's a great question. And you actually went to right the heart of what we did. So in flow states have triggers, preconditions that lead to more flow, right? You know this. And the most famous is the challenge skills balance, which we talked about on the last episode.
Yep.
Right. And the idea here is flow follows focus. So the state only really shows up when all our attention is in the right here, right now, in the task at hand, present moment. And the idea with flows trigger the challenge skills balance is we pay the most attention to the task at hand, to the now, to what we're doing, when the challenge of the task slightly exceeds our skill set. You want to stretch but not snap. So a bunch of years ago, Miyachik sent me High, The Godfather of Flow Psychology, and a Google mathematician sat down and they tried to calculate what's that exact ratio between challenge and skills. And they did a back of the envelope calculation and they came up with what Mike called a made up number, 4%. It's not a real number, just a good metaphor. We took that good metaphor and actually ran a bunch of studies on it. It's really freaking hard to test. And I don't think anything we learned is definitive, but it was damn accurate. So for most of us, under normal conditions, we pay the most attention to the task at hand when that challenge is about 4% greater than our skills. So that's stretching, but not snapping, right? You don't want to overload yourself. Too much fear is going to block flow, but not enough stimulation. You're bored. You're not paying enough attention to the now. It turns out in older adults, and by older, this could mean over 30, depending upon mindset and a bunch of things, right? And old is very much, this is one of the things that it's very clear in the book. And one of the things that we've learned over and over again, and make me come back to this in the conversation in a second, we're not going to linger here, but mindset is so much of the ball game when it comes to peak performance aging. We can come back there, but the mindset of old can set in as early as like your 20s, right? But the point here is older adults have a much more shrunken challenge skills sweet spot. It's because of something known as allostatic load or allostatic overload. All the traumas, all the bad shit that happens in your life leaves scars in your nervous system. This is talked about as allostatic load. And one of the things it does is it shrinks the challenge skills sweet spot. So we went in with the foundational idea was 1 inch at a time. Start with an established motor action plan, a movement that you can do 100% of the time with zero fear and no conscious interference. So for example, with skiers, intermediate skiers, everybody can do a hockey stop. If you're right, like everybody knows how to do that. So that is if you take a hockey stop and sort of do it on a particular surface, you're moving into a grind, which is an actual park skiing trick, right? So you can start with the hockey stop, this thing that beginner skiers learn how to do, and build on it 1 inch at a time. And why are you doing that? Because even though you may feel like your old self, like you're the same athlete you were in your 20s, and you from a physical perspective, I'll go back to the physical stuff in a second, but from a physical perspective, you're probably much closer than you think you are. The mental stuff is a real challenge here. On the physical side, the one thing I want to say really quickly, the older idea about aging, which is what you could call the long, slow rot theory, it's that our mental and our physical skills decline over time and there's nothing we can do to stop the slide, is, in a word, bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, utter nonsense. Like, it's utter nonsense. But what we now know is that all the skills that we used to think were decline over time, they're use it or lose it skills. And you really have to use them to hang on to them. But if you do, you can hang on to strength, VO2 max, like all these physical skills that were supposed to decline over time. No, you can hold on to it for a lot longer and even build on it than anybody thought possible. So the physical stuff is there. The shrunken challenge skill sweet spot. And what happens is, especially when you're learning something new, if you're not getting flow along the way, first of all, that's what underpins motivation and grit and all the things and keeps you coming back. It's miserable. And you're not flow accelerates learning. So the most important thing has to be dropping into flow along the way. Also, people don't know this because they pay attention to the work that Csikszentmihalyi did on flow. They don't realize that he spent half his career working on adult development. And flow is actually seen as one of, if not the major engine of adult development. It's what drives us forward because when we go through flow, because we have to push in our skills, on the other side, we're a more complex person. We've got new skills. We're more adaptable. And because flow automatically expands empathy and where it helps us see other people's perception, we're a little wiser. This is the mechanism of adult development. Here's the coolest thing. I don't know if you know this or not, but wisdom is a neurobiological trait, right? It's a distinct thing. We know what it is in the brain. And flow, the two things that flow amplify are expertise and wisdom, right? Over time, that's what gets built up by using the challenge skill sweet spot. Both of them are neuroprotective against cognitive decline. So if you want to stave off dementia and Alzheimer's, what are the best things you can do are have novel, challenging social experiences and outdoor environments. That's the physical side of it. And on the mental side, the reason you want to have those things is for lifelong learning, so you can build up wisdom and expertise, because those things are unbelievably neuroprotective against cognitive decline. And there's research going all the way back to the 90s that, show you can have advanced signs of Alzheimer's in your brain upon autopsy and have exhibited none of the signs of Alzheimer's or dementia, provided you've built up enough expertise in cognitive decline, because it's how, or wisdom is because of how it forms neural nets in the brain.
Managing passwords can be a real headache, right? Think about it. Every website requires a new password. Each one needs to be unique, secure, and somehow memorable. But there's a better way. Welcome to the world of 1Password, where your entire company can generate strong, unique passwords, store them securely, and access them across any device without ever needing a reset. Imagine never having to click Forgot Password again. With 1Password's award-winning design, managing passwords becomes a breeze for you and your entire team. It's trusted by millions, including top companies like IBM and Slack. Here's the best part. My listeners can try 1Password for free for 2 weeks. Right now, get your free trial at 1Password.com/productiveconvo. Secure your passwords and simplify your online security with 1Password. Starting an online business or expanding your physical storefront online has never been easier thanks to Shopify. This global commerce platform supports you at every stage of your business journey. From launching your online shop to managing a million orders, Shopify is there to simplify and accelerate your growth. It's not just about selling products. Shopify helps you manage every aspect of your business with their all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. But that's not all. Shopify helps you convert visitors into customers with the best converting checkout process on the internet, which performs up to 36% better than other platforms. And now, a special offer for my listeners. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/timecrafting, all lowercase. Whether you're just starting out or looking to scale up, Shopify is the perfect partner for your business.
You know, one of the things that, as you were talking about this, I kept thinking about was cadence and pacing. And I wonder, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, the importance of managing, it might not be the right word, but I'm going to use it anyways. Like managing your pace or your cadence when you're trying to, take on a challenge like this. So you mentioned like the hockey stop, right? Like it's, there's a repetitive nature to it. And obviously depending on someone's age and expertise, like you mentioned, I'm imagining that pacing and cadence plays a role, right?
So what's interesting here, the answer is the short answer. Mm-hmm. But less than you think, and here's why.
Okay.
If one of the secrets to peak performance aging, and this is sort of what our country was, is you want to engage in, these are very specific things. These words mean something, and I'll define them afterwards. Dynamic, deliberate play as much as you possibly can. So dynamic means it requires strength, stamina, balance, agility, and coordination. Mm-hmm. And those are very specific things. They're skill sets that all need to be trained. But if you want to amplify angiogenesis, which is the growth of new vasculature, and neurogenesis, the birth of new neurons, you want agile, coordinated movements. Is the most important thing. The brain is developed for movement purposes, right? It's to guide movement. That's what the brain evolved for. So to get the most out of our biology, this is the dynamic there. Deliberate play. So what you said is repetition, right? Yeah. This is what I'm coming off of. You were talking about deliberate practice, right? Yeah. Anders Ericsson's 10,000 hours, do the same thing over and over with tiny incremental advancement. Which is often how people walk up the challenge skills ladder. In older adults, you want to replace deliberate practice with deliberate play. Deliberate play is often talked about as repetition without repetition. It means you do the same thing you just did, but just improv a little bit. And the improv, you can dial it up a notch if you're feeling brave and good and strong. Or to get to your question about timing, you can dial it way back down, right, if you're not. So it's cadence is important because you need recovery days, you need sleep, and you need a bunch of that stuff, of course. But it's really about how you sort of tune the challenge, skills, balance in real time based on this dynamic, deliberate, play-based approach, which is really what gets you farther faster. Does that make sense?
Totally, totally. And it led me, it leads me right to another question about circadian rhythms, because I'm a night owl right now. And I know, I've noticed as I've gotten older, I'm still a night owl, but I'm not as much of a night owl. And I mean, I've talked to Dr. Michael Bruce and others about this when it comes to, you know, chronotypes. And as you get older, you naturally wake up earlier, like, and you want to go to bed earlier. How much of a role does that play in what you've discovered or the work that you've done in this book particularly? Is it very...
Couple things you should know.
Sure.
Thing one, most of the so-called memory decline is another myth of aging, right? It's not inevitable at all.
Okay.
And some enormous portion of memory decline is actually sleep disturbance, because we do, right? Our chronotypes tend to shift, and there tend to be sleep disturbances. Now we are getting very good at sort of figuring out where those things are coming from. And we know, you know, sleep hygiene becomes really, really important. Go to sleep at the exact same time, wake up at the exact same time, cold rooms, dark rooms, those things really, really matter. But where this gets interesting and where this feeds back into the conversation we've just been having, one of the things about allostatic load and emotional regulation in general, if you are sleep deprived, the amygdala, which it governs also all our emotional responses, but really our fear responses, this is a crazy number, but it showed up in studies. Like the first time I heard this number, I called bullshit. And I went back and there's 20 years of studies to back this up. But I literally, the first time I heard it, I was like, there's no way that can be true. The amygdala is 60% more reactive when you're sleep deprived. That means you are 60% more emotionally unstable when you are sleep deprived. If allostatic overload is an issue in older adults, right, and shrinks the challenge skills sweet spot already, and you're going one inch at a time, it is really freaking hard to go one inch at a time if you're sleep deprived as well. Mm. Some huge portion of what we think of as memory problems and cognition problems in older adults are actually sleep problems. And it's the same mechanism. And if you're super sleep deprived and you have a really hyperactive amygdala, it just becomes really hard to tune the challenge skills sweet spot, right? Like where, right, when you're totally overloaded and exhausted and don't have any emotional resilience, like how do you find that becomes a really more complicated problem? So it's really interesting. From a cognitive level, there's another stat out there that I find really, this is in much older adults, so like over 75. 93% of, and this, I'm taking this number out of a book by neuroscientist Daniel Levitin, Successful Aging. He's a brilliant thinker on it. 93% of cognitive variability in older adults is actually about having the wrong glasses, the wrong hearing aid. It's about our senses not getting the right information, not about cognition. And the other stuff in cognition really appears to be about sleep. It really appears like if you sort of have the right like prosthetics, right? Mm-hmm. And enough sleep, and you're doing the hard work for expertise and wisdom, lifelong learning, that work with flow, right? You're probably not going to face any cognitive issues unless they're like disease related to something that you write later in life. And I don't, and like Alzheimer's, dementia, it's it's really neat. I think it's really exciting. And what's really, you know, what's cooler is I have to say this firsthand experience, and I've now put through a lot of different people through a bunch of different. So we took the ideas that were in the experiment and we turned them into a training, which we've now run with 300 people, I want to say.
Okay.
All, you know, most of them 50 and above or 40 and above. Though I will say, peak performance aging starts young. I'm talking about 50 and above, but like the research is really fucking clear. There's shit you want to do in your, you want to rock into your 80s and 90s and 100s, you can. And interventions at any point matter. I mean, there's great data that shows you start exercising, even low level exercise, you're totally sedentary in your 80s and you start exercising just like walking upstairs instead of taking the elevator, that kind of stuff. You can have drastic impacts on cognition, even at that end of the spectrum. Like I'm totally sedentary, I'm in my 80s, and I'm a polypharmacy mess on 11 different, you know, whatevers. Even then it works, but like there's stuff you want to do in your 20s, there's stuff you want to do in your 30s, 40s, 50s. And some of it makes aging a lot easier. And I'm going to make one point on this and then I'm going to go back to your question. But sure. One of the things that people don't know is when we enter our 50s, if you get it right, and I'll come back to the it, you gain access to legitimate cognitive superpowers. Whole new levels of intelligence come online in our 50s, new levels of creativity, new levels of empathy, new levels of wisdom, new levels of complex problem solving. There's all this stuff we get access to, but you only get access to it if you've passed through these certain thresholds of adult development. By 30, you got to solve the problem of identity. You got to know who you are in the world, right? By 40, you need match fit, a tight fit between your strengths and your values and what you do for a living or most of your time. By 50, here's a weird one. You have to forgive those who have done you wrong and forgive yourself. And if you don't, you can't gain access to the wisdom and the empathy that starts to come online, right? And then in your 50s, while you gain access to these superpowers, if you want to hang on to them, you have to counteract the natural risk aversion that comes with aging and the physical fragility that comes with aging, right? The physical fragility, you have to exercise, right? Like there's no, like, but then, and so it's interesting. There's stuff, there's real advantages that actually come to us. In fact, one of the origin stories of this book was I had, so the superpowers of aging that I was talking about, this is predominantly the work of a man named Gene Cohn. He's often thought of as one of the big pioneers of peak performance aging. He helped create the National Institute for Mental Health and Aging in America in the 70s. He was the first psychologist to say, hey, wait a minute, I've been hanging out with older people. Doesn't seem like the long, slow rot is right. Like they seem capable of a lot more cognitive stuff. And by the way, the boomers are aging and we got to deal with this problem. So like, let's start studying successful aging, right? And he was the first guy, and he's the guy who made all these discoveries about the superpowers of aging. And, you know, a bunch of our ideas, we used to think that there was no neurogenesis in the adult brain. We just thought there was all this stuff that happened. All that stuff got overturned. And when it got overturned, Gene Cohn went, okay, if that's not real, what is real? And he ran two of the largest studies he's ever done and sort of came out the other side with these superpower ideas. And I had learned about them and I was running around talking to CEOs. This was after my book Bold came out. And I was doing a lot of work going to CEOs. And they were talking about hiring. I kept finding myself in these conversations about hiring, of all things. And which is a very, if you've ever run a company, you know, hiring is an enormously challenging problem. In fact, we were talking about it perfect segue here. We were talking about it earlier. So hiring is enormously challenging. And I was, people kept saying to me, you know, my ideal employee for the 21st century, I need them to be creative because if they can't be innovative, I can't keep pace with the rate of change in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's really freaking hard to train creativity. It's really hard to hire for it. He's like, and I also need empathetic people. Why? Because the mantra of 21st business, 21st century, is like customer-centric thinking. That's like, how do you take care of your customers? And inside, right, we want a culture of psychological safety and diversity. And like without empathy, none of those things are possible, right? And I was like, well, wait a minute, like older adults go through the roof on empathy and go through the roof on creativity. Why aren't we hiring older adults in droves? Like the data is really clear. And I spent a couple of years asking people this question and doing some research. The answers I got overwhelmingly were risk aversion, because it doesn't matter how creative people get, if they're risk averse, they're not going to implant the creativity in the company, right? So that was a problem. And the second one was physical fragility. they didn't want the time off, that they were worried that people were going to take too much time off or not have the energy to work as hard. And none of those things are true, right?
Yeah,
you can train, risk aversion is trainable, physical fragility, all these things are trainable. So a lot of like, even though I ran an experiment in like park skiing, I sort of ran a business experiment because I was like, wait a minute, like if I can learn how to park ski in my 50s, we can solve the physical fragility issues and the risk aversion issue. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, and that's one of the things that I think is most exciting is I think we have, you know, the most underutilized workforce ever. And that, you know, everybody, you talk to anybody who's in successful aging, healthy aging, performance, any of the variables, what's the number one thing to have a successful older adulthood? Don't retire.
Yeah.
Number one, right? Don't retire. It's a disaster.
Are you a small business owner struggling to find the right talent for your team? I've been there and I know how challenging it can be. That's why I recommend LinkedIn Jobs. It's not just any job board. It's a community where you can find professionals who are the perfect fit for your business, many of whom aren't checking other job sites. In fact, 70% of LinkedIn users aren't visiting other leading job sites, making LinkedIn your best bet for finding top talent. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can post your job and reach qualified candidates quickly. 86% of small businesses find a qualified candidate within 24 hours. And now, you can post your job for free at linkedin.com/conversation. That's right, for free. Don't miss out on finding top talent. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/conversation today. Terms and conditions apply.
Let's go back to the principles that you discussed when you were working with the experiment with people, the performance that you had, you said there was 12 of them, I think, right? Is that what it was? Or there was a series of them that you put people through?
There was a series of them. So it started with, the idea was go one inch at a time. Oh, mm-hmm. let me tell you what it wasn't the 12 things.
Sure.
Let me sort of walk you into, you asked for an origin story and there's dozens of origin stories. And I started with the dogs for you, but like, what kicked off the actual NAR experiment? Why did I lose my mind? What actually happened?
Mm-hmm.
There were a bunch of, like, I worked 9 years without a break and I was planning on taking 2 months off to ski and COVID happened and I didn't get to ski because they closed the resorts and I got, like, that's what happened personally. But right before that happened, I had the last conversation I was ever going to get to have with Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi because he died a year after this. And I called him up to ask him a question about to his history as an action sport athlete and flow. Mm-hmm. And what he basically said to me is, I was saying, Mike, you were a much more serious rock climber and mountaineer than you ever let on. But I was like, I was reading an interview with you that it was just translated out of Italian and you're naming famous Yosemite climbers from the 1960s. And you would have never known those names if you weren't. And I was like, so you got to tell me, like, this flow stuff for you, this was really like, you were having these weird ass experiences as an action sport athlete, but you couldn't sell that to anybody. So you came up with this idea about, we'll study it in artists. Tell me the truth. Is that really what happened? And we have that. And there was this long pause on the phone. And I was like, oh my God, did I offend him? Right? Like, oh shit, what happened? And he's 80 something. He's had a stroke recently. So he was already talking slowly. And all of a sudden he's just like, you got to be careful. And I didn't know what he was talking about. I was like, you've got to be careful. Like, has Mike lost the thread? Like, did the stroke affect his brain as well? And I literally, there was like a minute long pause before he says, you got to be careful. And I'm like, what do I do? And I was like, okay, you just got to go right at it. I was like, Mike, what do I have to be careful about? Right. Like, and he's like, you do something your whole life for flow, like climbing mountains, get to be my age. Some days you can't even get out of bed. Forget about climbing mountains. He's like, you need a backup plan. You got to be careful. And what he was saying was one flow junkie to another, have a backup plan for how you're going to get into flow in older adulthood, because your primary method may be denied to you. And if this is the thing that brings you joy and life and meaning and all the things, right? This was not an academic discussion. This was literally one of the nicest things he's ever done for me. It was like one flow junkie to another. Mm-hmm. Like, let me tell you something that nobody tells you about old age. And so I'm a diehard skier. Skiing's always been my primary flow activity. It's how I get in the flow. But as a big mountain skier, that means steep, gnarly, dangerous, fast lines all the time. That's the easiest way to flow. And I was like, you know, if I could learn how to park ski, I know that creativity is a flow trigger. And if you can creatively interpret terrain features, right, I could turn a beginner run into a slope style course. Slope style is that discipline in skiing that mixes jumps and wall rides and rails. There's the Olympics, if you saw Eileen Gu, right? That's slope style. And I was like, so if I do this, if I get from zero to intermediate, I'm going to have a million more. I'm going to have a backup plan. Maybe it's not the final backup plan that Mike was talking about. Maybe I need to learn how to play piano to like put a backup plan behind my backup plan. But I was like, this makes a lot of sense to me. And that was where the experiment came from. It was came from Mike saying, you know, get a backup plan because you don't want to be a slow junkie in your 80s without a backup plan. I was like, oh, shit. Okay. Great advice, man. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That was sort of what kicked me into it. So the goal, that was why 5 years didn't matter. I was like, if I'm, you know, if it takes 5 years, great. I'm still going to have. And, you know, the funniest thing about it is, it's early season here in Tahoe where I live. And we've had one snowstorm and the resorts are sort of not really open. And I was skiing over the weekend and they've only got two beginner runs open. And like all of my, everybody I know who's like a diehard big mountain skier, they wouldn't even go to the resorts because there were crazy crowds and whatever. And we went, got on literally a beginner lift that nobody was on because it's a beginner lift. Everybody else is fighting for the like one other run. And we turned side hits into a slope style course, spent the day there, great flow state. Everybody else is, you know, miserable because it's crowded and there's nothing rowdy open and whatever. And we had house at last. And I was like, and it was funny because it was 2 years earlier, almost to the date that I started the experiment, the first time or three. And I was laughing because I was like, none of this would have been possible. This is why I did this. Mm-hmm. This is exactly why I did this, because this is going to be available to me as an athlete well into my 70s or 80s. In the way that I'm doing it, which is kind of amazing.
No, it's as we've been having this conversation, we're going to wrap up here in a minute. My family wanted to go rock climbing and I've been like hesitant, really hesitant because of all the things that could happen. Right. Like, but we know that there's safety protocols and all that stuff. But the more we've chatted, the more I realized like that, as somebody who's getting up, like is pushing.
Yeah, 50, so let me let
yeah,
me just
yeah, yeah.
put it
go ahead,
in,
go ahead.
In a phrase. So if you want to summarize, how do you summarize peak performance aging in a phrase? You know what I mean?
Yep.
The best way to stay young is to couple smart lifestyle choices and you sort of turn your life into a high flow blue zone.
Yep.
Right. With regular doses of challenging social creative activities that require dynamic movement in novel outdoor environments. That is literally in an English sentence, the entire, I mean, there's a bunch of neurobiology and physiology underneath that, but the best way to stay young is to couple smart lifestyle choices with regular doses of challenging social and creative activities that require dynamic movement in novel outdoor environments. That's exactly rock climbing. Let me tell you one reason.
Sure.
Okay, here's the thing you need to know. And so one, blue zones, right? These exceptional longevity communities. There's a reason that most of the big blue zones in America are in action sports communities. They're in Summit, Colony, Colorado. Action sports athletes are actually neuroprotective against cognitive decline. And here's why. Most neurogenesis, birth of new neurons, right? You want to preserve your brain. You want a birth of new neurons. It takes place in the hippocampus. Hippocampus is the map making software in the brain. It's because we were hunter gatherers. So you have to understand where you are in novel, unpredictable outdoor environments. That's what we evolved to do. So if you put the brain in novel, unpredictable outdoor environments, you not only, so 700 neurons a day are born, and this is older adults, so like above 75, right? About 700 a day are born. You get more, that knob gets turned up if you're in novel outdoor challenging environments, because your brain goes, oh shit, you know, this is what I evolved for. So this Summit, Colorado is the longest lived community in America. And it's where Vail is and Aspen and Beaver Creek. People live 10 years longer there than any other county in America. And this is one of the main reasons why, because you moved to Summit County, Colorado, because you want to have novel challenging social outdoor experiences on a regular basis. That's why you live there. And thus we see the results.
So beyond the takeaway of the fact that, you know, I'm going to start tapping into the backup, a backup plan, because you're right. Like, I mean, I go for walks and things like that. But by the time this episode airs, I'll have been rock climbing with my family at least once, if not.
By the way, let me tell you something about your walks.
Sure.
I'm assuming you go for walks because you probably walk a dog.
Nope, and, I just go for a walk.
You just go, okay. Walks are great for peak performance aging, unless you have bad knees or a bad lower back. Mm. And even then, I would say do this, just do it slowly. And again, once you get a weight vest.
Mm, okay.
There's like 11 different reasons. But if you get, like, we have a partnership with Hyperwear. I like their stuff because it's very low profile, but I've used a couple others. One, exertion levels go up with a weight vest and you don't even notice.
Yeah.
So it's an easy way to take them. But the single best correlate for healthy aging is actually strong legs. Strong legs are, first of all, it's the number one indicator of longevity, health, and cognitive preservation. Now, there's a bunch of reasons for that. Strong legs allow you to move around and have challenging social creative activities, right? Stuff like that. But, and bone density is an issue as we age. And if there's all kinds of studies that show that wearing a weight vest, just while you walk around, while you clean the house, while you go for a walk, improves bone density. But as I said, there's all these use it or lose it skills that have been trained over 50. Weight vest is the single best multi-tool I know of because it trains like 7 or 8 of them. And if you're doing weight vest hikes in the outdoors, and I talk about this a lot, as you know, in our country, right? There's a bunch of stuff on it, but the weight vest is a really cool addition. And it's a way of 1 inching at a time. The problem, because you could you could start with a 1 pound, mm-hmm. add a pound, you know what I mean? You just go up. Very practically, and it also trains balance automatically, because if it's on the upper torso, every time you take a step, your core muscles have to stabilize. So you're getting balance, you're getting agility, you're getting strength, leg strength, you're getting better stamina because it's a little harder to walk, right? So you're getting all these things with a very low impact thing. If you add in weight vests and then start rock climbing on a regular basis, that's a great, great, great plan.
Steven, we could, as last time, we could keep going, but I want to be conscious of time, and we'll get to do this again. So the book's called Gnar Country, Growing Old, Staying Rad. Where can people, because as of the airing of this, the book is now available. So where can people pick up the book?
The book is now available, and you can get it anywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble. In fact, we hit the barnesandnoble.com bestseller list yesterday, and I know we're recording this a little early, but news has leaked out to some of my fans. They bought enough stuff. I was like, I didn't even know that was possible with pre-orders, but okay, it's possible. That's amazing. My fans are amazing. any bookstore, gnarcountry.com is the website, and gnar is short for gnarly. It's spelled G-N-A-R. Country is as you stand. And the reason, by the way, let me give you as a last thing, why is it called Gnar Country? What the hell am I doing? Right. It's because the actual definition, gnarly or gnar in action sports, is high in perceived risk and high in actual risk, which is a phenomenal description of our later years. High in perceived risk, high in real risk, and also sort of a phenomenal description of the gritty mindset that you need to sort of thrive during those later years. So that's why it's called Gnar Country, but gnarcountry.com is the website, or stephencoller.com, any bookstore.
Stephen, this has been great. Thanks again for having a productive conversation with me today.
Mike, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Big thanks to Stephen for joining me on the program. Once again, you can find all the links we mentioned in our show notes, which can be found at productivityist.com/podcast464. Or by looking at the podcast app you're using right now, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, whatever. And you can definitely get to what we talked about right from your app. You can also subscribe to the podcast right from your app. And that way you can easily access the over 460 episodes in our archives, as well as make sure you don't miss a single episode of what's to come. And there's plenty to come. Also, another way to support the show is by checking out the sponsors, not only the ones you heard on the program today, but other sponsors. You can find them at productivityist.com/podcast sponsors. And when you check out those sponsors, let them know that we sent you. That's it for now. Until next time, I'm Mike Vardy, the host of A Productive Conversation, reminding you to stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.